My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast.
Hello, welcome to the EDP F1 podcast. We are back, and we should probably apologise because it's been a long time of us being away. The summer break may be catching us out both at the start and at the end. We just thought we'd go for an elongated break to see how much we could get away with. But I'm back. We're back. Perry Hamilton's back.
Yeah, we took more time than the teams did.
We did. It's very tiring doing this podcast.
You know, traveling the world. They may not know. We podcast from wherever the races are. We're in Belgium right now.
Certainly mentally.
Yeah. Well, no, the budget didn't stretch. So I think we put up pictures. We've put up some pictures of Belgium on the wall.
Yeah, we've got a nice picture of Eau Rouge.
Yeah, that's it. Well, yeah, we have to have that. I think we should keep that up for all of the podcasts, not just the one post Belgium.
Yeah.
Always have Eau Rouge.
Here's one for Norwich favourites. Drove up Rose Lane the other day, and I thought it was a bit like Eau Rouge.
Yeah, you got the did you bear left and go up towards Archant?
That's right, and then obviously back,
and then of course back again
slightly
to the,
back
to
around
the right. Yeah, I don't think you were going the right speed for it to feel.
I
like
hope
Rouge,
not.
Though, were you? No, but yeah, okay. Rose Lane to, is that Agricultural Hall Plain? Isn't it? I believe
probably
that road is.
It's the Norwich Eau Rouge.
The Norwich Eau Rouge. That's what it is, right there.
Recommend you enjoying that one, but obviously within the speed limit. Well, we're back. We've got a lot to catch up on, Perry, and time is short. So let's touch on what we missed, which was basically the Hungarian Grand Prix before the break.
Yeah,
Lewis
did.
Won.
Yeah, very, very convincingly.
And
very well.
Probably set him apart as maybe the main challenger for Sebastian Vettel over the rest of the season.
In as much as you can say that, yeah. I remember at the beginning of this season, we were all very confident in Fernando being the main challenger. You know, Lewis has actually taken that from him, but that's more an indictment of the Ferrari's lack of continuous performance. But yes, at the moment, if you had to give it to anyone, I'd probably say Lewis looked the biggest threat to it. So, you know, but even then, that's not saying a huge amount where we are right now.
Well, exactly. Fourth successive pole position for Lewis Hamilton at Spa, which of course kicked off the second half of the season with the weekend just gone. But sadly, he couldn't turn that into a race win. Sebastian Vettel doing what he does best, which
is what Lewis Hamilton predicted he would do.
Indeed.
Pre-race, Lewis said, you know, it's actually sometimes it's better to be in second because you can get that toe coming through. So and that's exactly what Seb did. And, you know, Lewis said that it could happen. He knew it could happen. Should he have been able to defend a bit more? You know, that early in the race, make your car as wide as possible. There's not a lot of space for Seb to twitch around. They're all very closely bunched up. He's got to be aware of that. I think Lewis got caught sleeping there.
Because it's fair to say the Red Bulls were miles ahead in pre-practice on the Friday as well. So I suppose the fact that they weren't on pole on the Saturday was almost the actual surprise, and obviously the weather played a big part in all that. Is the title all over? This was round 11 of 19. We've got 8 races left.
No, I mean, you know, there's 200 points still available. If you come first in every race, you win every race, that's 200 points. That's a lot of points. Of course, a lot of things have to happen for that. Red Bull would... The key thing for Red Bull is their reliability, and that has proven dividends over the years and years and years. I remember, you know, when Seb's alternator was failing a couple of seasons back, that was news, you know. But if a Williams alternator fails, no one bats an eye. You know, it's not. There are some teams that don't have that reputation for consistency and reliability. Red Bull is one of those teams. Whether it's their chassis, their suspension, their gears, everything about it, you know, even the engine from Renault is an absolute solid block. So that's what you'd need to have happen. You would need to have Red Bull lose something on their reliability. But at the moment, the reliability issues only come into play if you have to try and change something on your car. You only change something on your car if your car's not performing and Red Bull are performing. You're more likely to see reliability failures from a team like McLaren, who are having to desperately try and catch up. And if you're leading the pack, you're not going to see many changes. You're not going to see too many tweaks. So you're not going to see that much of a drop-off. I wouldn't say the season's over, but I think that's the motorsport fan in me clinging to hopes. But no, I wouldn't say it was over yet. There's a lot of racing still to go, and who knows what can happen. It's not done until it's mathematically done. And I think we've still got some fantastically exciting races to come.
And we could have some funny stuff coming up over the next few rounds. Lotus are going to try out a new long wheelbase car, which is a big part of their preparations for 2014. I think they won't be the only team trying to do that over the coming races, especially if they may be conscious of where this year's championship goes. So it might be interesting to see teams trying things out, and if they come off, don't come off. It might make for some funny old results between now and Brazil. I don't know if Sebastian himself is getting a bit bored, because he seemed to turn up in Belgium with the most ridiculous hair. It's just sort of a weird sort of blonde tint and... a strange boy. He looked 12 again. I mean, he was kind of rocking the beard thing, and he looked like an adult, and now he's sort of gone backwards.
Yeah, he does need to provide his driver's license every time they let him in a car, just to prove he's old enough to drive it. But yeah, he did. He seemed sort of a bit bored of it all, but then you see his reaction when he wins the race, and he's cheering and whooping and hollering and jumping around like he's just... got his first points, you know. it's amazing to watch. He does. There are drivers out there who love racing, and there are drivers who love winning. And to me, I think Seb is a driver who loves winning. And I think that's quite telling. Obviously, it is past actions that we've discussed. You know, Malaysia comes up and things like that. So he is a man who loves to lead races, and he loves to win races. He loves to be the guy on the top step of the podium. So, but I don't think he overly enjoys the battle too much.
It's interesting. Maybe he's regressed to being a kid because of the way Red Bull try to parent him a lot with their radio messages. And
well, they do, Rocky they and... do. But you can understand. Okay, well, Seb likes to go fast, and they pay him to go fast. There is that. But they pay him. I was having this discussion with a friend of mine while we watched the race. That he said, they pay him to race, so let him race. My response was, no, they pay him to win races, and there is a difference. And if you're 10 seconds ahead of the nearest car and it's the last lap, you don't need to take your foot off the accelerator, but you can ease up. You have a responsibility. I touched on this when we were talking about his multi-21 fiasco. You have a responsibility to the team. The team comes first. No one person is bigger than the team. And I think this is their very gentle way of saying to Seb, no one person is bigger than the team. You don't need to do this. But at the same time, they never actually say to him, okay, Sebastian, do not go for the fastest lap. They always say it in some little code so they can at least say to the bosses... look, bigwigs, we're trying to rein him in. But Seb still has that wiggle room to say, well, you know, you only told me to ease and everything, and you didn't give me a direct order, and it was suggested. I really do think they're trying to walk a very fine line with it, which in years to come could be tricky. But at the moment, it's working.
Well, they've done a good job of it, haven't they, over the recent years. You can't argue with how they've managed him. I love Spa. It's one of my favourite tracks.
It's just the number one, isn't it? It is.
Possibly wasn't the most exciting Grand Prix. But still,
I'll agree with you there. For one of the more explosive tracks on the circuit,
but they all got around the first corner and everything,
which was so upsetting. To the point where the Resta Sutil Maldonado little tangle was the only major point of contact in the race, and that was more stupidity than anything else. You know, it wasn't anyone trying to be on the very ragged edge and the car just got away from them and, you know, the track bit back. No, there was none of that. It was someone going, oh, just drive out. Oh, no, I've been hit. And that was kind of what happened. There was that element of, oh, it's an accident, but, oh, hang on, that's just really dumb. And we were kind of hoping we'd seen the last of dumb things from Pasta. But no.
I don't know if the end of those things will ever come along.
No.
Okay, then, it's time for DT's impression. He may not be here, but his impression is...
Hello,
That's right, EDP F1 pit stop time. We're not going to stop at Lotus first. We're going to stop at Kimi Raikkonen's mobile home, I suppose, or hotel, or wherever he gets to rock out his own mobile helicopter tucked around the back of the circuit. Something, I don't know, maybe a floating tent.
Oh, most likely. Cruise liner. If it's Kimi. He's probably got a custom-made igloo that is all kept nice and cool for him so that his magnums don't melt.
I love this. That has to be true. Goodness me, how much has been talked about Kimi Raikkonen's future over the last few weeks. It dominated the summer. Curious situation now, though. I mean, it's almost a falling out with Red Bull, and that they didn't continue the negotiations, and Kimi doesn't know how things stand. Also, Martin Whitmarsh has sort of mentioned that Kimi, he definitely wants out of Lotus, and maybe we'll take a poke at him and bring him over to McLaren, which seemed to come out of left field almost.
Well, it did, but you have to go for the best that's available to you at the time. If bringing Kimi Raikkonen to a team that, let's be honest, has not acquitted itself well this season, if I'm Kimi Raikkonen, I am pretty much the prized free agent going into the end of this season. And you've got to be looking, if you're a driver, you've already got to be looking at the end of this season whether your seat is secure or not. And Kimi Raikkonen, there are probably maybe two teams that he couldn't walk into and go, I want a seat here, and that they wouldn't move heaven and earth to make it happen. Mercedes is one, because they are set with Lewis and Nico, and I think that's very sound of them. But I think pretty much any other team, you've got to be doing your due diligence to look into that. The question for me would be, well, JB is very invested in McLaren. They are very invested in Perez. So if Martin Whitmarsh is out there in the public saying, well, we might take a poke at Kimi, unless he's previously discussed this with his two drivers, that could cause some friction. Because Jensen's getting on a bit, and I'm sorry to DT, I know he's not here, but you know, Jensen's getting on a bit. He hasn't shown the form that we came to know him for when he won his championship in 2009 with Braun. He's been consistent for McLaren up until this season. But he is more and more becoming a bit like Fernando Alonso was when the Ferrari wasn't performing. And it's always about, well, yeah, we'll do it, but the car's not good enough. Yeah, well, we would be up there, but the car's not going to perform. And it's almost like a sort of dismissive kind of thing. That's not the JB we love. We love the JB who gets out there and, you know, comes from the back of the grid in pouring rain and wins the race on the last corner. My God, that was so good. But that's the JB that we want. And so you're talking about, okay, maybe it's JB who would go, but then you've got Sergio Perez, who showed so much promise in a Sauber that no one expected anything of. And when McLaren took a flyer on him, you know, the sage, wise heads were nodding, going, oh, this is a shrewd move. But actually, it's taken him until halfway through the season to adapt. So do you invest in your future, or do you go with the proven commodity? I don't think Kimi will end up at McLaren either way, so it's a moot point. But it's a difficult thing for Martin Whitmarsh to manage unless he's previously broached it with his team.
Yeah, it's a very interesting narrative, because, of course, there was this suggestion over Jensen's future before Martin Whitmarsh spoke of McLaren's sort of, I don't know, interest, I suppose you could call it, in Kimi. So whether that narrative of, oh, Jensen's contract hasn't necessarily been sorted for next year, oh, and also they might possibly want Kimi, whether that's been driven by the media or it's come from sources and you know, sort of what's happening underneath, that's almost the crux of it, to know really what's happening there. It's hard to... It depends. Maybe Jensen's had enough of F1 and wants to do something else. You know, you don't know, but...
Well, maybe, but the thing with Jensen is, I mean, you can tell he still feels like he has a lot of racing left in him. It may be that actually a year off doing another type of racing might, and you know, and winning, might get him to suddenly go, you know what, yeah, I want to get back into racing again. Who knows? But, you know, and hey, saying about Jensen's future and Kimi at McLaren, at the end of the day, this is a business. For us watching, it's a sport. For everyone involved in it, it's a business. This may well be put out so that Jensen feels, oh, actually, they have got options outside of me. I better cave and let my demands go down a little bit. Who knows? You know, or it could be being put out there for that reason. Or it could be put out there by Jensen's people to then, so that the Jensen faithful then cry out and go, no, McLaren have got to keep him, and they come under pressure from fans. Who knows how that's going to work?
Must be said, Lotus, I think, are still very, very keen, unless Raikkonen's demands are ridiculous, to keep him for next season. Jensen also had a very good race in the end. He did very well in qualifying. A nice afternoon of it, really, on race day. Unlike his teammate, Sergio Perez came almost ganged up on them on him, didn't they?
Yeah.
All those nasty other drivers ganging up on Sergio.
And how dare they? How dare they? But you're driving a McLaren, you've got to be able to hold your own. I know McLaren have been poor this season, and we've said that before, we've discussed it, but you are driving one of the top marquee names in Formula 1, one of the longest surviving names in Formula 1. You have to be doing better by this stage in the game. At least put up more of a fight for it.
Yeah.
You know, show some tenacity, which we know Sergio's capable of doing, and this is what concerns me, is that, you know, you can't just go and hide behind Mummy McLaren's skirts if it gets tough. You've got to get out there. He's happy pushing his teammate off the track. He's happy showing his, you know, his teeth when it comes up against Jensen. Do it against some of the other drivers, you know, make your case.
Also, I should mention, sort of following on from the Kimi stuff, I suppose, Fernando Alonso had his best race for ages, I think, second.
Fantastic.
Ferrari finally at the races, because I thought they'd been missing for about 3 months.
Yeah. I mean, it was incredible to see. Not a great qualifying, you know, not a good start, not a good start position. Good start, great traction off the line. Managed to, because once you get four cars back, La Source becomes dangerous.
And as he knows from last year,
and as you said, Michael, everyone got through that corner unscathed, which was incredible. Mildly boring, but incredible. But some people took that opportunity to make up a lot of ground, and Fernando was one of them. And his race was managed beautifully by the pit wall, by the crew, all of his pit stops. I think they had the fastest pit stop of the afternoon. Was that Ferrari? I think that was Ferrari. Please correct me if I'm wrong. listeners out there, please correct me if I'm wrong. But I think that may have been a Ferrari had the fastest pit stop of the afternoon. But everyone in Ferrari really came together, and that was a cracking drive. But the sad thing about it was, he never looked in danger of winning that race. He never looked like that was going to happen to him. So you're there going, Fernando's driving great, but the best you can hope for is second.
Yeah.
Unless something happens, unless it rains, unless there's a safety car, you know, but if all things continue, there's no way he's going to win. And that is sort of a shame.
It is a shame, but that's where Red Bull are. You have to admire the way they chalk these things off. Interesting watching Eddie Jordan pedal the line of course, Fernando's maybe representatives having chats with Red Bull about that Mark Webber seat that's going. I mean, that surely couldn't happen. I wonder.
Again,
Kimi then back to Ferrari, and people might not worry.
It's due diligence. That's, you have to do that, because at the end of the day, as an agent, as Fernando's people, Fernando pays them to not only get him the best opportunities in terms of marketing, but also in terms of driving. Fernando wants to win world championships. Every driver on that grid wants to win world championships. Jos Verstappen wanted to win world championships. Never happened. But every driver, if you're one of the top 22 drivers in the world, 24 drivers in the world, whatever, you have to be willing to go out there, and your main goal has to be that championship. And the best way to do that isn't necessarily to say to the team you're currently with, come on, up your development and what have you. Fernando's given Ferrari a good chunk of time, and overall, that chunk of time, their repayment to him in their terms of what they've offered him has been disappointing, both for the fans and for Fernando as well. It would make sense to at least talk, and maybe let it leak out that you've talked, because suddenly Ferrari are running around in Italy going, good Lord, we've got to make a car that will, a very British accent for people working in Italy, I understand that, but I'm not going to do an accent. But they are running around saying, you know,
shame.
Good Lord, we have to get a competitive car under us because Fernando is looking elsewhere. And if it has the desired effect, then that's great. But if you're Fernando, you've got to be eyeing up any car that's faster than you and going, just think what I could do in that. Just think.
Right, shall we do the of the weeks? I might mention something I would normally have mentioned already by now, at this point. A driver and goat of the week.
Driver's got to be Fernando. We talked about it. Cracking start all the way up. It's between Fernando and JB. But I'm going to lean towards Fernando because I think it was commanding, and he just always seems now to be there or thereabouts, and it's because he is, you know, the best driver on the grid. I don't dispute that at all. He's the best driver on the grid. but he doesn't have the best car under him. So for me, driver of the week, Fernando, GOAT. We've already discussed it.
Pasta.
Pretty much has to be Pasta.
Fantastic.
Now, I have another theory here.
Excellent.
The only reason it won't be Pasta, and it probably will be Pasta because of his performance, was in a race. But I would say Charles Peak, purely because pretty much every other backmarker managed to get it into Q2. And Charles didn't. And that's got to be a bit embarrassing, hasn't it? You've got that first opportunity to show that you can out-qualify other cars, albeit the weather played a part. I'll agree with that. But you've got it in you to show that and to say, hey, take a notice of me. Other teams that I'm now racing against, take notice of me, because I don't want to be in this catering seat my whole life. And he didn't. And to me, that is a golden opportunity lost to at least, you know, he's got the same info that Guido's got. Why aren't they making the same decisions with Charles? That is my only concern. But no, I toyed with that. But no, it's going to be Pasta for his ridiculous mirror signal manoeuvre and smash.
I love it. I have Alonso and Maldonado written here too.
That's because great minds think alike.
Indeed, Michael. They do, Peg.
But it makes a very boring podcast. So if you could mix it up a bit, that would be great.
All right. Well, maybe on others. Yeah, point taken on Charles Peak as well, because Guido van der Garde provided my highlight for the weekend, coming in third in Q1. I know it's a ridiculous, you know, highlight. You know, it's Q1 and Q2 are irrelevant. I don't really like them, to be honest. But just doing that, showing those signs, getting a call right, it's nice to see. And you're talking about Guido then, aren't you? You're talking about his efforts and Caterham.
And you're talking about Caterham, and Caterham are suddenly, people are suddenly looking and going, wow, look at that guy, let's keep an eye on him. And it works, you know, it works for him, which is great. But yeah, I liked the fact that they went out on slicks and they were 3 seconds slower than everyone else, but they stuck with it because they had faith in it, and it worked. And it was a gamble, and it worked. And it was brilliant. Absolute stroke of genius by both Caterham and Marussia.
Caterham will be very interesting, as I wrote in my EDP column this week, very interesting to watch over the second half of the year. They're settled at their new home. I think they're finally getting it all together. Obviously, Heikki Kovalainen ran in FP1. In Spa,
and we love Heikki.
He'll do it again in Monza.
You know how much we love Heikki at the F1
so
podcast.
Guido is under pressure, but I think we might see some proper development, hopefully.
Now, seriously, you would think that after his performance in Spa, you think Guido's the one under pressure, you don't think it's Charles?
Only because he's getting the FP1 drive ahead of Guido. So,
okay.
But I don't necessarily... Well, Heikki's got a real problem because he won't bring money to the team. And he's even said himself, look, if I've got sponsors, I'm taking that money myself. I'm not going to give it to the team. So it's going to be very difficult for them to take him on, but you just don't know how it will work out. We'll see. So that's my highlight. Anyway, Guido's efforts. Did you have one?
As much as it pains me to say it, Seb's overtake, first lap, to get that lead.
He does it so often.
He does.
He does.
And he did it. He did exactly what he needed to do. Webber did exactly what he always does, which is have a bogged down start.
Which he almost prophesied.
But that backs a lot of people up. And that, you know, that blocks people from getting past Seb. So whether he means to or not, he's helping his teammate. It gives Seb a nice clear run. And Seb, with the fresh tyres, you know, the fresh start, bam.
I doubt Mark does it for Seb's
benefit. No, I don't think he does at all. But Mark Webber is not very good at starts from the line. Let's just say, do they have rolling starts in Porsche? I don't know, because that's where it's
happening. Let's hope
so. That's probably why he wants to go there. Goodness, maybe he should go to Daytona, they have rolling starts.
Yeah, but, too true.
But yeah, it's an interesting one. Seb's overtake was cracking, and it was what needed to be done at the exact moment that it needed to be done. And it led the way for him to win the race. So, you know, not only was it probably a highlight, but I would say it was the most important part of the race.
Right, I agree with you there, most definitely. Team, we didn't touch on team. Mercedes, obviously third and fourth with Lewis and Nico.
Yeah, they showed... Yeah, but, I mean, really, if you're going to get overtaken on the first lap at, like, the third corner, you should at least be expecting to hold on to that second if you started on pole.
That was a weird thing, actually, with that opening lap. As good as Seb's overtake was... It did seem to just catch Lewis out completely.
Which, as I said, it shouldn't have done. Lewis knows what can happen at that. He knows how to make his car wide. You know, he knows how to make himself very difficult to overtake.
Mind you, he did predict it before the race, so...
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe he had a couple of quid on it. I'm joking. That is not allegation.
No, see, if I'd have said that, no one would have batted an eyelid, but you've got an obligation.
So. I'm joking. Think of it as humour.
Yeah, we do. But, I mean, no, genuinely, I would actually probably give Team of the Weekend to one of the Bankmarks. I'd probably give it to Marussia.
Yeah.
Just for showing that presence of mind on the Saturday and just, you know, doing the best that they can. And it's got us talking about the Bankmarks in a positive way. And that is a rarity, as regular listeners will know.
I like this young team moniker that they've picked up from Ben Edwards. He calls them the young teams, which is a little less patronising, I suppose, than the new teams. All right, then. Well, I feel like we've caught up now. I feel like we're up there. We've got a lot of predictions to get through. So we'll bring those in our next pod as we look ahead to Italy, which will be with you very soon. But in the meantime, feel free to check out edp24.co.uk/F1 for the latest news involving Heffel-backed Lotus and Hingham-backed Caterham. My Formula One column is there. You'll also find links to the Formula One podcast that you are now here with listening to. You can get hold of us on Twitter as well. Please do so at EDPF1 or me at Michael J. Bailey. And Ped, you are
at PedHD56.
And that is us. We'll be back, as I said, looking ahead to Monza and the power and the pedigree and the passion of Italia. But until then, take care of yourselves and we'll speak soon. Goodbye.